The House comes to oral questions. The first in the name of Debbie Naruwapeka.
Tēnā koe, Te Pika. My question is to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by his government's policies and actions?
Yes, and especially my announcement yesterday of 9 ambitious public service targets to help get New Zealand back on track. And the government, this government, owes it to Kiwis to focus on delivering on the things that matter most to them, like shorter wait times for emergency care and elective treatments, safer communities with less violent crime, and more kids at school and achieving the skills they need to live a better life. This is an ambitious government that wants the very best for all New Zealanders. We're not here to manage decline. We're here to get things done and deliver better outcomes.
Kia ora. What is his response to the Iwi Chairs Forum withdrawal from the National Plan of Action Against Racism due to what they view as this current government's commitment to, quote, colonial racism and, in particular, targeted racism against Māori, unquote?
No mandate.
Well, I'd completely disagree with that question. We want to see Māori do much better in this country, and that's what this government's working hard to do.
Supplementary. What is he doing to regain the trust of the Iwi Chairs Forum following their withdrawal from the National Plan of Action Against Racism?
Well, what we are doing is we're making sure we rebuild this economy, we restore law and order, we deliver better health and education for Māori and non-Māori.
Supplementary. What is his view on the impact that policies such as the Fast Track Approvals Bill, the Treaty Principles Bill, the removal of Section AA from Oranga Tamariki, as well as the dismantling of Māori wards and the Māori Health Authority have had on our iwi authorities' mistrust of this government?
I disagree completely. We may disagree with the previous administration and the way they went about things, but we are here to make sure we improve outcomes for Māori. Because you can talk about it, as the previous government did, but outcomes for Māori went backwards under the last 6 years across a range of measures. We're saying enough is enough, and I look forward to that member's support for many of the programs that we have.
Supplementary. What will he do to alleviate the concerns of the Acting Race Relations Commissioner, who has stated that his Justice Minister's attempt to remove some Māori experiences from the action plan will deny many Māori lived experiences with racism, which studies show recur daily for 93% of Māori?
I disagree completely. We don't stand for racism in any form in this country.
Supplementary. Does he agree with the Justice Minister that focusing on colonial racism is unfair to migrant communities, or does he agree that with the documented experiences of migrant communities in the Ki Te Whai Ao Ki Te Ao Marama report, who overwhelmingly affirm that their experiences of racism in Aotearoa stemmed from the fact that Aotearoa is a colonised country?
Again, what I'd say to you is there is no place for racism in New Zealand, period. And whether you are a new New Zealander or you've been here for some time, the same standard holds for everybody.
Question number two, the name of Chloe Swarbrick.
To the Prime Minister, does he stand by his government's statements and actions?
Yes, and especially the target that I announced yesterday to reduce violent crime and to make our communities safer. One of this government's key priorities is to reverse the increase in violent crime, making Kiwis feel safer in their own homes, their businesses and their communities. We've already made progress to return the rights of victims instead of criminals to the centre of our justice system, and we look forward to implementing many, many more actions to restore law and order.
Is the Prime Minister aware that there is already a legally required independent expert review of the methane target among all emissions targets? And if so, why has his government announced that they will do their own new independent secondary review?
Well, it's something that we've talked about in opposition for some time. It's something that we've campaigned on. And all we're saying is we're making sure we've got complementary work going on to make sure we have the latest knowledge around methane science. From there, we can set targets.
Just for the moment, look, interjections are fair, nothing wrong with that, but it's getting pretty loud. So just keep it as rare and as a speaker once, or an assistant speaker once said, as witty as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Is the Prime Minister aware that the Climate Change Commission appointments are legally required to be consulted across political parties? And if so, is he concerned that his government's second review is therefore inherently less politically independent and more politicised?
Yes, I agree with the first part of the question.
What does, and I quote, consistency with no additional warming from agricultural methane emissions, end quote, mean in the context of the National ACT Coalition Agreement?
Well, what I'd say is that we want farmers, you know, have to play their part in driving our emissions down. We can't just shut down the world's best farmers and send agricultural production offshore and making global greenhouse gas emissions worse in the process. We believe no additional warming is a fair basis for methane targets in particular.
Yeah. I might just say to the government side that if the Prime Minister is giving an answer, it's not particularly helped by the added comment from his own team. Dace Wilbrick.
Does he agree with the Climate Change Commission, who yesterday said, and I quote, changing the biogenic methane target from the current range to no additional warming and keeping the current net zero component of the targets as it is would mean higher emissions and an increased amount of warming than the current target, end quote.
Well, what I'd say to you is that is speculation because we haven't had a discussion around... Would you like to listen to my answer? Let me finish my answer. What I'm saying to you is you're jumping to targets. What we're saying here is we want to update the science base and make sure that we have the latest sense of methane science in place.
Does the Prime Minister agree with the Climate Change Commission that if the government seeks to reduce methane emissions targets, that it would be requiring households and businesses across this country to do more?
That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is we're reviewing the science base on methane to make sure we do that. I'll just say to the member, I really look forward to her adjusting the Green Party website to come out in support of our GE policy so that we can actually drive emissions down.
Shame on you.
Question number three, and over the right honourable Chris Hipkins.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. To the Prime Minister, does he stand by all of his government statements and actions?
Yes, I do, and I'm particularly proud about what we announced around getting our kids back into school and also driving up academic achievement. It is an absolute travesty that only 47% of our kids go to school regularly in this country, a legacy of the previous government. And the consequence of that is kids are missing a year's worth of school. We're proud of our target of making sure we have 80% of our kids ready to go at high school so they can actually live the lives and the dreams that they want to have.
Supplementary question. Were all aspects of this morning's announcement on truancy approved by the Cabinet? If not, which parts have yet to be approved?
Well, as I said, we have an ambitious government, and that is fantastic because what we observed over the last 6 years was a government that spent more, borrowed more, taxed more, and delivered worse outcomes. You had six, your government had 6 years, you did very little, you failed at it. What we're doing is declaring 9 key targets, 2 in the education space. We're marching hard towards it, and every quarter we're going to be doing things to make sure we make progress on it.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. It was a pretty straight and simple question.
I'll call you for the point of order.
What was that?
Point of order.
Oh, point of order. Mr. Speaker, it was a pretty straight and simple question, and the Prime Minister has given a diatribe on the previous government's record. He hasn't actually answered or addressed the question that I asked him.
Well, I think he could probably say something more, but I think he had addressed it, the Prime Minister.
Sorry, I didn't hear would you like to ask the question again?
I'm happy to repeat the question.
Yes, please do.
Were all aspects of this morning's announcement on truancy approved by the Cabinet? If not, which parts have yet to be approved?
As we said, the announcements that we made today have been approved by Cabinet.
Have the details of the traffic light system he announced this morning been approved by the Cabinet?
No, again, what the Minister announced was that was our proposal, and there's more work to be done on that, and that will come towards Cabinet in due course. But what is exciting is that we are a government that is actually wanting to do something about attendance rates. We care deeply about our kids being in school so they can learn, so they can achieve more.
So how come Penny Simmons was reprimanded...
Supplementary, Honourable Chris Hipkins.
How come Penny Simmons was reprimanded for a decision being announced that wasn't approved by Cabinet, but David Seymour's allowed to make decisions that haven't been approved by Cabinet?
I reject the premise of the question. We have a fantastic plan to tackle school attendance in New Zealand, something the previous administration, the previous minister for 5.5 years didn't seem to care about. We care about it. We're getting our kids back to school, period.
Honourable David Seymour.
Does the Prime Minister trust his capable ministers enough to announce details such as the colours of the traffic light will be green, yellow and red, and that each colour will have differing consequences, differing in severity, as I did just this morning?
Can I just say, well, I think we have a fantastic Associate Education Minister who is very fixated and bringing thoughtful leadership to how we get attendance up in this country. So I want to thank him for his great efforts.
Point of order, Honourable David Seymour.
Mr Speaker, I seek leave to make a small correction. I'd actually said the colour was orange.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's incredibly helpful to the House.
Supplementary question,
right,
Mr
Honourable
Speaker.
Chris Hipkins.
Was either the Minister of Health or the Minister of Mental Health consulted on the proposed cuts to the Suicide Prevention Office?
Well, again, that's not happening. What has happened is that you had the Ministry of Health say they didn't adequately brief the Minister. In a very quick period of time, the Minister said that he wants the functions of the Suicide Prevention Office to continue, and I can tell you I have great faith in that Minister to deliver and to continue to make sure what is an absolutely tragic record here in New Zealand is continuing to improve.
Mentory question, Mr Speaker. Was either the Minister of Health or the Minister of Mental Health consulted on the proposed cuts to the Suicide Prevention Office?
Again, you heard the public comments where the Ministry of Health said that they did not adequately brief the Minister. The Minister directed very clearly that he expects that function of the Suicide Prevention Office to continue, and it will.
Supplementary question. Well, does he agree with Matt Ducey, quote, "I'm responsible for the $2.5 billion that we spend for mental health and addiction ring-fenced funding. I'm going line by line by line by line through that." And if so, how did the Suicide Prevention Office almost close without its minister even noticing?
Again, I've addressed the question. The Ministry of Health said they did not adequately brief the minister, and the minister made it very clear that he expects the functions of the Suicide Prevention Office to continue.
Supplementary question, Mr Speaker. Is the reason that the Suicide Prevention Office was being considered for closure because his government is requiring the Ministry of Health to cut 6.5% of its funding?
We are going to see a further increase in spending on healthcare, but what we are not tolerating is what that member did with his government for 6 years, which is he didn't actually... We're moving money from the back office...
Mr Speaker, almost every question that I've asked the Prime Minister today, he's resorted to an attack on the previous government without actually answering what are relatively direct questions on his government's current announcements and decisions. The cutting of the Suicide Prevention Office is not a non-controversial matter. The questions that I've asked have been very straight questions. I don't think it's too much to ask that the Prime Minister takes them seriously and gives serious answers to them.
Well, I think he has given serious answers, if I'm listening to them. But I would also say to you that it is not inappropriate for ministers to refer to programs of a previous government. The difficulty comes where that reference becomes an attack. And I'd ask that all ministers, including the Prime Minister, think carefully about those comments in an answer. Prime Minister. Are you finished?
I'll finish, yeah.
Are you finished? Yeah, can you ask the question again?
Supplementary. Is the reason the Suicide Prevention Office is being considered for closure that his government are requiring the Ministry of Health to cut 6.5% of its spending?
Well, he did.
The Suicide Prevention Office is not being considered for closure.
Question number four, Scott Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance. What recent announcements has she made about the government's fiscal policy?
Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Nicola Willis.
2 weeks ago, I released the budget policy statement where the government sets out its short-term intentions and long-term fiscal objectives for fiscal policy. In summary, Mr. Speaker, isn't it funny that we have opposite us members who interject to ask us how long the statement was, as if the definition of success is how many pages you can put in your document?
Don't talk while I am. Go back to your answer.
Intentions and objectives are to return to surplus, to get debt heading down as a percentage of GDP rather than going up as it has been over the past 5 years, and to reduce government spending as a proportion of the overall economy.
Supplementary, what is government spending as a proportion of GDP?
Well, Mr. Speaker, the half-year update in December forecasts that core Crown spending in the current 23-24 financial year will be 33.4% of GDP. Now, to put that in context, core Crown spending in 2018-19, just 5 years ago, was only 28% of GDP. Now, clearly, COVID disruptions were a factor in this increase. But the crucial thing is that, unlike in other countries, there was no attempt to bring government spending back down again after the temporary disruption passed. Spending was deliberately kept high, and this government is committed to bringing it down to ensure it is effective, targeted, and within our means.
Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, what is the government's objective for spending?
Well, Mr. Speaker, New Zealand currently has a structural deficit, and there are only three broad options to deal with that. Borrowing to cover that deficit, which is unsustainable. Taxing New Zealanders more, which most of the members opposite thinks a great idea, but which we're not big fans of. Or reining back on spending. And we will do the last of these. We intend to control growth in core Crown spending so that it reduces as a percentage of GDP. And over time, our objective is to bring spending down towards 30% of GDP.
It helps for order in the House if general statements about everyone's views are not made, only those of the government who is being held to account here.
Mr. Speaker,
the Honourable Scott
further Smith. Supplementary to the Minister, how does the government intend to reach that objective?
Well, Mr. Speaker, this right-sizing of the government's footprint will be achieved through ongoing restraint and reprioritisation across multiple budgets. We cannot, on this side of the House, undo in one budget which was created in six. The government will be charting a medium-term course of fiscal consolidation and not overreacting to movements up or down in economic forecasts. We are ending the approach of recent years which confused spending money with achieving results and which doesn't believe that money can ever be saved within the public sector or ever be put to better uses.
You're probably only slightly ahead of me, but point of order, the Honourable Kieran McNulty.
Well, Mr. Speaker, you'll note that this side of the House stayed silent for the majority of that exchange. We left it to you and you responded appropriately, but the Minister appears to have ignored your advice and continued with her intent regardless.
Only from the point of view that it was an incredibly lengthy answer, too long, and secondly, as I said before, it's not inappropriate for ministers to refer to situations that they have inherited. But I am watching very carefully for the attack aspect. Move now to question number 5, in the name of the Honourable Marama Davidson.
Tēnā koe, e te māngai to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by all his government's policies and statements?
Yes, and especially the target that I announced yesterday for 75% fewer households in emergency housing. Too many children are being raised in motels, and my government is focused on reversing the huge growth seen under the previous government and its homelessness minister.
Will he guarantee to the representatives of Ngāti Tama, Ngāti Mutunga, Taranaki Iwi, Te Ati Awa, Ngāti Maru, Ngāru Wahine, Ngāti Ruanui and Ngāroru Kitahi in Parliament today that the Trans-Tasman Resources Seabed Mining Project will not be included in the listed projects in the Fast Track Approvals Bill?
I just say to you, the government supports mining on a responsible basis and there's a process underway.
Amen. Does he share the concern of Ngāti Ruanui that the Fast Track Approvals Bill will be used as a, quote, backdoor to gain consent for the mining operation, end quote, after Trans-Tasman Resources withdrew from the process to determine whether its application for seabed mining is environmentally safe?
No, I'm proud of the Fast Track process that we're bringing.
Is it appropriate for the government to enable mining companies to bypass court-directed consenting processes through which iwi, environmental experts, local government, local communities and the fishing industry have been fighting for 10 years to prevent extractive industries destroying our marine environment?
So just make them questions statement and not question. Speeches. The Prime Minister may respond.
Well, to be honest, I struggled to find what the question was.
Does he have confidence in the impartiality of Minister Shane Jones and his ability to balance responsibilities under different portfolios, including resources, regional development and fisheries, in relation to decision-making under the proposed fast-track legislation?
Absolutely. That is a minister that is determined to grow this country, to do the right thing by this country, who thinks deeply about where it's going, and he has my total backing.
Question number six, in the name of Suze Redman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Social Development and Employment. Why has the government set a target to have 50,000 fewer people receiving the Job Seeker Support Benefit by 2030?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Louise Upson.
Because the Coalition Government wants to help New Zealanders live better lives and reach their full potential. And the best way to do this is through work. There needs to be a greater focus on supporting people off welfare and into work, because a previous government failed to capitalise on long periods where employers were crying out for staff. And when they left office, there were 70,000 more people on the Job Seeker Benefit. Mr. Speaker, we now have almost 190,000 people in New Zealand receiving the Job Seeker Benefit, and that's approximately the size of Hamilton. We aren't prepared to sit back and let people become dependent on welfare, because we know that having a job is the pathway to a better life for them and for their children. While the welfare system will always support people in need, our government will do more to ensure New Zealanders can reap the rewards and opportunities that having a job brings.
Yeah, that was a very, very long answer, so I'd ask people preparing questions to keep them a little more concise. They're getting very long. Suze Redman.
How long are people predicted to spend on benefits if we continue with the previous approach to welfare?
The previous approach is the economic forecast.
Mr. Speaker.
I think I'm just going to, when we get a moment, just going to ask the member to re-ask that question. It is effectively setting the battlefield for an attack, and it's not on. So ask it a different way.
Thank you. Ask in a different way, did you say, Mr. Speaker?
Well, this is a think on your feet moment, yeah. Just a minute, a question's being asked. Just wait till there's a bit of quiet.
How long are people predicted to spend on benefits?
Mr. Speaker. The previous government's approach saw a substantial increase in the amount of time people were forecast to spend on welfare. People on the job seeker.
Sorry, take your seat. You can't start a question like that, an answer like that. You can start it about...
Mr. Speaker,
you can perhaps mention a date, the Taylor Fry report, and a figure, but you can't start with a question, an answer like that.
Mr. Speaker, the Taylor Fry report that was published in December last year showed the forecast of the future years expected that people would spend on welfare. For a job seeker benefit, they are estimated to spend on average 13 future years on welfare. For those who move on to welfare under the age of 25, they are forecast to spend 19 future years on main benefit. No one would want this outcome for their child, and we're unwilling to sit back and watch it happen.
Supplementary, Mr. Speaker.
Hold on. Okay.
What actions has the Coalition Government already taken to reduce welfare dependency?
In February, we announced the first two actions to reset the welfare system. Firstly, work check-ins will begin for people who've been on the Job Seeker Benefit for more than 6 months, to ensure that they are taking action to find work and getting the support they need. Secondly, we reversed Labor's light-touch approach to benefit sanctions and made our expectation clear. Those who can work should work, and job seekers have responsibilities to become work-ready and find a job. Our government is committed to giving beneficiaries the help they need to find work, but there will be consequences for those who don't fulfil their responsibilities.
Supplementary, Ricardo Mendes-March.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Will she commit to ensuring the 50,000 people who she wants to get off income support enter employment but pays at least a living wage and matches their skills and aspirations?
Mr. Speaker, our government is focused on reducing the number of job seekers by 50,000.
And we believe that a job is better than no job, and a job is a path to a better job.
Sue's Redmayne.
What are the forecasts for job seeker benefit numbers in the short term?
The number of people on the job seeker benefit is unfortunately expected to increase in the coming months due to the challenging economic circumstances. Job seeker benefit recipients are expected to peak at 198,500 in January 2025. That means it will be difficult to reduce the number of people on the job seeker benefit immediately. But we owe it to those New Zealanders who find themselves without a job to do all we can to help them to get back into work.
Question number 7, in the name of the Honourable Barbara Edmonds.
Whawhitau lava loa whiunga, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance. Does she stand by all of her statements and actions?
Honourable Nicola Willis.
Mr Speaker, yes, in the context in which they were made. I particularly stand by my statement that hard-working Kiwis deserve personal income tax relief. And given that they've been waiting 14 years for it, the Coalition Government will be delighted to deliver it to them in the budget in May.
Does she stand by her statement in the context of her fiscal savings program, quote, "Ministers will then consider those proposals. We might reject some of them. We might ask some of them to go a bit further. And then we'll take all of those together and assess the implications for headcount from there," unquote.
Yes.
Supplementary. Is it her expectation that vote ministers will review and approve cost-saving plans prior to Cabinet considering the full budget package?
Yes.
Supplementary. Has she sought or received advice from Treasury on the implications of the fiscal savings made in each agency?
Yes.
This is going well.
Supplementary. Why then is she and her ministerial colleagues claiming to be surprised by the impacts of her savings targets when she has confirmed that ministers will approve these proposals?
Well, Mr Speaker, if the member had actually looked at her own questions, she asked whether all of this would be subject to final Cabinet approval. Well, Cabinet has not given final approval to the budget yet.
Question number 8.
Mr Speaker.
Hold on. Just hold on. Brian Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Building and Construction and asks, what announcements has the government made around making it easier and more affordable to build in New Zealand?
The Honourable Chris Pink.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. This government has a plan to rebuild the economy and lower the cost of living. A crucial part of this is making it easier and more affordable for Kiwi families to build homes. That's why the government is amending the Building Act to remove artificial barriers to the use of building products from overseas by recognising overseas building product standards from trusted jurisdictions and requiring building consent authorities to accept products that are equivalent to or better than those already in use in New Zealand.
Why are these changes required?
Mr Speaker, what a constructive exchange. It is too difficult and expensive to build in New Zealand. The cost of building a house has increased by 41% in the last 5 years, and it is around 50% more expensive to build a standalone house in New Zealand than Australia. It is almost impossible to use new building products in New Zealand without facing huge delays and compliance costs. This entrenches the use of well-known products, thereby lowering competition, increasing the risk of supply chain disruptions such as during the recent jib shortage, and ultimately makes it more expensive to build anything.
Supplementary. What feedback has he received on these changes?
Mr Speaker, the feedback has been extremely positive. Phew. The Chair of the New Zealand Construction Industry Council, Malcolm Fleming, said that he is, quote, really pleased, and that this is the industry's biggest issue, starving demand for new construction. Julian Lays, CEO of the New Zealand Building Industry Federation, meanwhile, agreed that this policy is a game changer that will allow more building products into New Zealand, bringing down costs. While finally, Shane Braley, Managing Director of Simplicity Living, said, What's good in Australia or Japan or Korea should be good here. They should have done this years ago.
Well done. Just ask speak into the mic if you ask the question. Thanks.
What else is the government doing to make it easier to build? Mr. Speaker, this government has a busy work program in construction. You could say we are really building momentum. In addition, you could say that, but you probably wouldn't want to. In addition to improving competition for building products, we are also putting the spotlight on building consent delays by requiring councils to supply building consent timeframes, lowering the building levy threshold, meaning Kiwis doing small renovations don't have to pay it. And finally, we have provided relief to rural New Zealand by exempting dams from under 4 metres from additional compliance costs. And there is still much more to come.
Question number 9, the name of Laura Trusk.
My question is to the Associate Minister for Education.
Yeah, look, I don't know what's going on with the mics, but you might need just to lean into it a little bit. The sound is pretty low today.
Is that better?
Okay. Yeah, it is.
Great. So my question is to the Associate Minister for Education. What recent announcements has he made regarding school attendance?
The Honourable David Seymour.
Mr. Speaker, New Zealand's shocking student attendance at schools is an absolute priority for this government. The target that we've set, 80% of students present more than 90% of the time, is ambitious. It's a full 7.2 percentage points higher than has been achieved at any time in the last decade. Attendance is a complex issue. And it's critical to use improved data and analysis to understand the reasons people don't attend so that we can target the interventions effectively. Almost 2 months to the day since I received the education portfolio delegation, I was proud to stand with the Prime Minister as part of this coalition government and release an attendance action plan at the, I have to say, wonderful Cardinal McKeffrey School here in Wellington this morning.
Supplementary. What actions will the government be taking to improve student attendance?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, we're going to see a lot more data. This government's view is that we should tell the people and trust the people rather than try and obscure the facts from them. We'll be rolling out a communications plan to improve awareness of the importance of attendance from term two this year onwards. We'll also be updating the public health guidance to help schools and parents decide if a student is well enough to attend, and we'll be clarifying the expectations around attendance to school boards. And I've just heard from Willow Jean Prime, the member for Northland, that somehow we don't trust the parents. This from a member who was in a government that propagandised and blasted New Zealanders and didn't trust them even to go outside for weeks at a time. That is not a member who should be heckling about trust.
Sometimes interjections so clearly heard will result in that kind of response. Laura Trusk.
Thanks. How will this government improve reporting and attendance data?
Through a number of medium-term initiatives throughout the rest of this year and next. From the start of next year, we'll be mandating daily attendance data to be reported by all schools and, again, reported to the people, because we tell the people and we trust the people. Now, Willow Jean Prime has just said, oh, you must need more back office for that. Well, let me help Willow Jean Prime. Actually, the Ministry of Education has been upgrading its IT software so that the student management systems from the school can automatically push the data each day. And this is an object lesson for the Labor Party. You see, we're actually going to be able to do more with less money using innovation and technology. Anyway, Mr. Speaker, as I was saying, we'll also be developing a traffic light system to set out the requirements and expectations for students and parents at each level of attendance. We'll be making attendance a strategic priority for school boards so they have clear expectations. but we will also be sharing best practice from schools that are effective in order that they don't have additional burden, but rather better information about how to get kids
That'll
to
do.
School.
That'll,
Mr.
That's
Speaker,
enough.
I could go on,
yeah,
but
could,
needless
but you're
to
not
say,
going to.
We've got quite a lot of policy to get kids back to school.
Yeah, no, that, we might just end that question there. Thank you very much.
Point of order.
Point of order,
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it would seem a terrible thing to penalise a hard-working member like Laura Trask for the heckling of Willow Jean Prime in my response to it.
No, that's not for it. It's for what was an excessively long argument that strayed well away from the point that was originally being asked. And that's quite a reasonable decision on my part. Question number 10, in the name of the Honourable Dr. Megan Woods.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Climate Change. Has he received advice that the science of biogenic methane's impact on climate change is already settled? If so, does he agree with that advice?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Simon Watts.
Mr. Speaker, as the Minister of Climate Change, I have not received advice from officials saying the science of methane's impact on climate change is settled. However, I do meet with a wide range of stakeholders, including the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment, who shares their reports with me on a regular basis. This government has commissioned a review to ensure that we have the latest science as part of our coalition agreement. I look forward to seeing the results of that review.
Supplementary question. Does he agree then with the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment's chief economist when he said the real debate was not about the science but what was fair for farmers to do, and that was a question for politicians to solve? Furthermore, and if the government is looking to save money, the science is done and was done pretty comprehensively, so they should be looking at our work before commissioning anything new. They'll just be dealing with all the same scientists again.
Well, that question rivals the answer just given by the Honourable David Seymour for its length, its length and its relevance to the initial question. However, the Minister may choose to respond.
Mr. Speaker, the review that the member is citing was undertaken nearly 5 years ago. It is an imperative for this coalition government to use the latest science available, and that's what our review will undertake.
Supplementary question. Is he aware that the rest of the economy will pay a higher price than otherwise if agricultural methane emissions are not required to assist with reducing the rise in global temperatures, a price that one report has estimated equates to a 1% change in our methane targets will require 40 megatons of extra reductions or removals in long-lived gases, and that will put an undue strain on our economy?
Mr. Speaker, what I can say is that I'm acutely aware of the significant role that our primary sector plays in driving our economy. And on this side of our house, the Coalition Government are wanting to work with that sector, not against them, to ensure that the review of methane that they undertake and are part of is based on the best available science.
Supplementary. Will he guarantee this House that if he were to make any changes to targets or the Act, he will continue the previous government's approach and do this via cross-party consensus?
Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to preempt a review that hasn't actually started yet. But what I can be clear about is this review will be comprehensive, it will have integrity, and the results, once that is received, will be in addition to the work undertaken by the Climate Commission, and we'll go from there.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Point of order.
The point of that question of what I asked the member, and it was a straight question, is whether he will commit to, once receiving that report, if there are to be changes, to do that in a cross-party manner as the previous government had done.
Yes, but you asked him if he would guarantee something that he said is not yet even a decision. And I think that's quite a reasonable answer on his part.
Supplementary. Will he rule out using the findings of the review as a justification for his government making a choice to have less ambitious reduction targets than those signed up to in the Paris Climate Change Agreement in 2016?
Mr. Speaker, once again, the review hasn't actually been started yet, so I am unable to make comments in regards to what that review will indicate. But what is clear is that all industries within this country need to play their part in order to reduce emissions to enable us to hit our targets. On this side of the House, we are committed to achieving those targets, and we're committed to working with the primary sector and the important role they provide with our economy.
Question number 11, the name of Jamie Arbuck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister for Resources, what recent announcements has he made?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Shane Jones.
Resources will play a critical role in our export-led recovery. And as part of my strategy as the Climate Smart Mining Minister, I have announced, Mr. Speaker, that settings will be developed to enable investors and other stakeholders to explore the potential of natural occurring hydrogen as a contribution of lessening our reliance on overseas hydrocarbon fuels, boosting our resilience, and ensuring that there is a suitable framework enabling people to find this potential sooner rather than later.
Supplementary. What work is he doing on unlocking the potential of critical minerals in New Zealand?
Minerals are about to enjoy a resurgence in terms of contributing to our strategy of turning our economic fortunes around. Not only will a critical minerals list and associated strategies be delivered, not only will studies be completed, but we will ensure where people want to invest in the mineral sector in New Zealand, there is certainty and no more of this nonsense such as no more mining on dockland.
Supplementary. What work is the government doing to enable regional and national significant mineral exploration to occur in New Zealand?
Led by my colleague, Jeremiah was a bullfrog. Led by Minister Bishop, the government has introduced the fast-track legislation. It is evident that the RMA, Conservation, Crown Minerals legislative regime need refining. This is an opportunity where the bill will facilitate the delivery of infrastructure, development, and regions will no longer be caught in protracted processes, which is causing projects to be not only overcapitalised, but for investment to dry up.
Supplementary. What are his ambitions for the resource portfolio over the next 3 years?
Mr. Speaker, in keeping with my personality, judicious and modest, but let me elaborate, Mr. Speaker.
It's probably enough.
We are telling global investors, we are telling Kiwi investors, our country is moving from cancel economics to can-do economics. We are open for business. We will have a legislative framework that rewards risk-taking, rewards investment, and restores the place of the extractive sector to a place of pride that it enjoyed with the development originally of the party sitting on the other side of the House.
Question number 12, the name of the Honourable Karen McAnulty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Associate Minister of Housing, Social Housing, does he stand by all his statements and actions?
E te māngai o te whare. Āna, kei te tino tautoko au I aku kōrero, I aku mahi.
Supplementary. Does he agree with Tama Pōtaka that National will build more social houses than the previous government?
I te wā I au e minita ana e tika ana ku kōrero, e nāri tēnā pia, koe rā te wā a Tama Pōtaka e mema pāremata ana mō kirikiriro ki te uru.
Just wait, do you want to hear that translation?
Do you?
Well, I'm okay with it, but there is that delay when you can use that delay if you want.
Yeah, point of order.
Point of order, yeah.
My point is that I'm interested in how you can receive that translation at the same time so that you can deem whether the
answer was... Well, I wasn't relying on the translation. Pretty simple.
Okay.
You got another question?
See how that goes.
Are they out of mind? Are they out of mind? It was body language. It's really quite...
Do you have another question? So?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Willie Jackson.
Mr. Speaker, does the Minister stand by his statement that he will deliver for Māori communities? And if so, how will he deliver more homes for Māori when his government disestablished the ministerial Māori associate housing role?
E te māngai o te whare. As you have heard through the last few months, we are ruthlessly focused on delivering on the genuine needs of Māori education, health and housing, particularly the over 1,500 Māori whānau who are living in the emergency housing disaster that the malfeasance of the previous government curated.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Just make the point. You can't make that final comment. You can talk about a situation you inherited, but not the attack that's just been launched.
Shocking.
So just watch that if it's right.
Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Willie Jackson. Yep.
Mr. Speaker, this is a robust place.
Yes, it is.
It has got to be possible for the government to make commentary about previous governments, because there has to be a bit of back and forth to contrast and compare records. I accept that supplementary questions should not be used with the sole purpose of attacking the opposition or previous government, but it has got to be possible for the government to compare and contrast what they are doing with the record of previous governments. Yeah. Otherwise, the place will become so sterile we may as well not bother turning up.
Just when you're ready. No, Willie, I'm responding to that. The point I make is that I think it is possible to do exactly what you're saying without making an accusation of, for example, malfeasance. And I think it is that stepping point between talking about a situation you're dealing with and the outright attack on another party's policy. The Honourable Willie Jackson,
Mr. Speaker,
will, of course, keep his question in the same bounds.
Mr. Speaker, will the Minister match the $750 million targeted investment for Māori housing that was delivered under the previous government? And if not, why not?
E te māngai o te whare. What we will have are targets to reduce the number of children and whānau in emergency housing. We have established that target and announced it yesterday through the Prime Minister. Rather than sitting by and talking about how we're going to help whānau Māori in emergency housing and to see those numbers go up by several hundred.
Supplementary question, the Honourable Kieran McAnulty.
Does he agree with Kāinga Ora that they will continue to increase the number of public housing places as long as it is funded to do so, as stated during the annual review hearing?
Mr. Speaker, we are absolutely committed to delivering on the genuine needs of all New Zealanders to ensure that there are sufficient houses to accommodate people, unlike the previous government, which curated a situation where there are now five times as many whānau on the social housing waitlist as there was when they started.
Supplementary. Does he agree...
Wait on. OK.
Does he agree with Kāinga Ora Interim Board Chair John Duncan that if the government doesn't provide the required funding past 2025, up to 10,000 houses may need to be sold?
Mr. Speaker, as we're all aware, we have inherited a significant fiscal cliff left behind for us by the previous government. But we are absolutely committed to actually delivering on the housing needs of Māori and all New Zealanders, unlike the development aspirations of the previous ministers.
Supplementary, Nicola Willis.
Can the minister confirm that despite having borrowed billions upon billions of dollars for Kāinga Ora, the last government managed to quadruple the state house waiting list?
I can absolutely confirm.
The question could easily be in order, but for one particular phrasing in it, and I'd ask the minister to, because we're in a learning situation here.
Yeah, I'll try again.
Wait on. Ask the question, but keep it in bounds.
Can the minister confirm that between 2017 and today, billions upon billions of dollars have been borrowed to put into Kāinga Ora. And despite that, the number of New Zealanders waiting for a state house today is four times as many as it was in 2017.
Mr. Speaker, Anna, I can confirm that. Kia ora tātou.
The Honourable Kieran McInulty.
Does he agree with the Salvation Army's Greg Foster, who said that they are having to pause future social housing developments because, quote, we've been told that there's no funding for us to build, exactly. End quote.
Exactly. Mr. Speaker, I cannot confirm that I've heard or seen that quote, but what I can some of us are working very hard on our ministerial portfolios at 6 o'clock, but what I can confirm, Mr. Speaker, is that we are committed to ensuring that the housing that we tautoko support, both public and private housing, will accommodate Māori and all New Zealanders. Tia Māori ora.
Supplementary, the Honourable Chris Bishop.
Can he confirm that advice provided to the incoming government in December 2023 from Treasury said that on the current track, Kāinga Ora is forecast to sell over 10,000 public houses in the next few years?
Mr. Speaker, I can confirm that, and what a surprise it was for me to read it.
Point of order. Point of order.
Mr. Speaker, I asked a question on an exact piece of advice and the Minister refused to respond to it, refused to confirm it, but lo and behold, he's happy to confirm it when he's asked from, his own side. And that's interesting.
It is, and it's... I'll have a good look at that. Hands up.
Supplementary.
Just when the House goes quiet, you can ask a supplementary.
Why then, when with community housing providers stating they are cancelling or pausing housing developments due to no funding certainty, won't he simply announce the funding they need so that community housing providers can get on with building the houses that minister promised?
Mr. Speaker, tēnā pea, me pātā tū koe ki taku huanei. Tōna minita tanga. Kia ora.
Yeah. That brings us to a close of oral questions.